All right, well, it's good to be back home, as I'd like to think of it. And I miss you guys. And one of the things I want to go ahead and get started with is, as you know, I like to show what we're doing. So if I didn't do that this morning, I'm quite sure you guys were disappointed. All right, so I'll start, and I'm going to weave what I'm about to show in my discussion this morning about stewardship. So what have I been doing in, I think it was 2 years since I stepped away from Marketplace Ambassadors. And so you want to know, here's what I've been doing for the last 2 years, and I'll tell you the story that led it there. But my Hubble update, okay? Remember when I left you, I was at a phase of the project where I just overcome putting into action one of the technologies that was critical for my portion of the telescope. And in my mind, it was time to relax. And that's what I'm going to talk about, how God had another plan. So, again, just to orient you with what JWST is scheduled to do and why, again, it's because your tax dollars that they're fighting over in Washington, D.C. is going to do this project. And it's exciting. So here's Hubble. Hubble roughly is circling the Earth. That's been functioning for the last 15, 16 years, sending back all those beautiful pictures, putting a stamp on, you know, the theory of evolution with my colleagues. And it's fun. And all of a sudden, that wasn't good enough. So they came together, all these scientists all over the world, and they decided they're going to go all the way out to L2, Lagrange 2. For those of you who took all your classes, you know, don't worry about it. It's just far, far away. Okay? it's 1.5 million kilometers away. So it's far. So here, 570. And this was really cool because when we messed up in the optics, we were able to send the space shuttle and go get it, rendezvous, fix it. Out here, no such luck. We're still learning things about what goes on out here. First of all, the temperature here and here is remarkably different. Out here, we're going to be operating at temperature to minus 37 Kelvin. If you do the math quickly, that's about minus 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, so just capture that. And you know, I want to put it in perspective, some of the pressures that I'm under and what God called me to. And, you know, I got lazy, okay? And that's what I want to talk about sometime in our vacation. God gives us talent. And for whatever reason, if you don't know what those talents are, you know, I want to have a Q&A, how you can identify some of those talents. But he gives everyone inside this room talents. So you need to know what those talents are because he's going to call upon you to use those talents in the marketplace. So if you recall from Hubble, why we had the mistake is that we did not test it on the ground. So now we're going to go all the way up to L2. You better test it on the ground. And so my job now is to come up with a tool on the ground to study something that's going to be 1.5 million kilometers away with severe temperatures ranging anywhere from room temperature all the way down to minus 500 degrees. And I have to come up with a tool that can measure these things through that entire spectrum, heat, temperature, optical, and everything here on the ground. And so it's a collection of some of the brightest minds in the world that I'm working with. I think I'm the dumbest guy on the team, okay, as a mechanical engineer. And so when I was asked to come in and take this over, I know I run to the hill, but God is kind. So what you're looking at here is the tool right now. It's coming together nicely. I'm happy to say this is a portion of it getting ready for me to take it inside our thermal vac chamber at Goddard Space Flight Center. This is the largest tool that Goddard has ever built. It's the largest optical ground-based tool that exists right now to do this type of test. Very expensive, but it's worth it. We're learning a lot technology. Late nights, failures. Just this week alone, I had to go in front of a board and explain why I'm still a little bit behind. And I said, well, I don't have any reference ahead of me to tell me if I was good or not until I tested it. And I said, oh, it's not good enough. So there's a lot of pressures being applied here. So that's what I've been doing as one of my jobs. The second one, I think the Lord decided to double down because of my laziness and give me another project. Some of you might have been involved here with this another project. He then asked me to take on the project of building a building for our firm. And what is it, a 35,000 square foot facilities? God was kind enough to get it all done within 1 year. And so we're scheduled. This is inside our INT area. We're going to be building some of the parts inside there. Here's the setup for some of the electrical things that we're going to be doing. Here's a class 10K clean room. And there's a whole story behind this. When I come back, I can tell you of God's kindness through all of this. Because I also did the weird thing. I GC'd myself while I was doing it. But it was a fun project because guess what? It happened in 1 year. Hubble, you know, that takes forever. JWST and the funding that the government is getting, we just found out, is not enough. So it was supposed to launch in 2011, this year, not happening. 2014, 2 years ago, not going to happen. Now we're predicting 2018. Okay, and that's the funding that we're going to... So it was fun for me doing this job because it was my money and I had to get it done quickly. So it was a fun job. Okay, so, you know, it's coming together, but I wanted at least, before I started, put things in context as I'm speaking here to show you that, you know, God's kindness is going to be there. And it's like oxygen. You know, when each one of you woke up this morning, you didn't guess if there was going to be enough oxygen for you to walk around today and show up. Well, if you picture, you know, God's like oxygen, he's there everywhere, whether you think about it or not. Okay? That's the beauty about us as Christians in the marketplace. Some of my colleagues said, why you seem to take those risks? And my question to them is, if you know my secret, I don't take risks. In the sense that, as a Christian, others who take risks. So I will talk a little bit about that in some specific ways. Okay, where I'm going to be speaking from primarily is in Matthew chapter 25, from verses 14 to 30. And I've asked Keith to kind of read a few of the verses for me. I'll go first. By the way, I was sick earlier in the week here. And let me kill this.
What were the verses again, Robert?
Verses 14 to 30. 14. Oh, I'm sorry, Matthew. And it's a story about, you know, the talents. So, as you know, one was given 5, 2, and then 1. And where I want to start is it's the steward who got his 1. And you know the story very well. That steward took that talent and hid it. And there was 2 years ago, I'm like that steward who took that one talent and hid it. Because what happened was, I was driving, it was on my vacation, I just declared victory on a portion of the telescope that I had labored for about 3.5 years, come up with this way with the team how to solve it. And we finally solved it, we're given the green light to go to production for it. And so I was like, great, now I can kick back. And I was driving with my family down in Virginia on vacation, and the phone rings, and it goes, hey, Robert, where are you? Oh, I'm on vacation. Can you show up early Monday morning? We got something to talk about. Yeah, okay, I'll show up. And so I showed up, and cut a long story short, because of the interest of time, I was asked to take over the OSUM, that test thing. And I'm like, why? And then, you know, the truth came out along of it. It was over budget, technology was way behind, and they needed to make a change. And so at first I said no. And I came with all the good reasons no. You know, I'm not an optics engineer. I'm not a physicist. You know, I'm not one of the astronomer guys. Because this thing is loaded with, a lot of technology. And here's the pressure, too. If that tool calibrates, this, I think we're up to 4 point something billion dollar instrument, telescope, and if it don't work, I will be on CNN. I promise you that. Explain it. So I understood the pressure that was in that meeting, what was being asked of me. And so I was not about to take that. And so I said no, and then I walked up, and then I got convicted. And it's like that first guy, you know, God gave him a talent. And as I was reading through that, the point that I would go ahead and make is, if you read through that verse, it says here, he said, "Master, I know you're a hard man, and you reap where you don't sow." And that was his reason and excuse back to the master when he showed up. And when you really translate that, and for me, when I read between the lines, that particular steward was lazy. He was lazy because he didn't want to go out and work on the talents that God had given him. And so we come up with excuses that, you know, hey, you know, you're a hard man, you know, and so you want to reap where you don't sow. Well, that was my excuse, you know. I didn't want to come out of my comfort zone. I also knew that, you know, on the back end, what was being asked of me would stretch me in a number of ways. And so that, I was convicted about that. And so there are going to come times that you're going to be placed in certain situations where you're going to be tested. But God is setting it up for you, if you're obedient, to watch His miracle work out in just so many ways. So that's the first thing I would want to, you know, leave you with, is that if you're not there yet, it's coming. Where you're going to find a situation where you have the talents that God has given you. And if you're here and you can't identify quickly what are some of those talents to take on a challenge that God has called you to, I would submit to you that you talk to your colleagues, you talk to your wife, you talk to your friends, you ask questions. But then I quickly realized that, you know, the reason why, first of all, these folks came and asked me is because of some of the successes I've had over the years to take on this project. And so I had to ask for forgiveness to the Holy Spirit for, you know, my laziness and my lack of trust in God for not doing that. So let's turn a corner here. And if there's enough time, I can talk about the building, because that's a whole other story. And, you know, I'm still going through that one as we speak. But let's turn the corner about some other key points here about stewardship. Stewards don't own anything. That's the first thing. So if Keith, if you can read verse 15 for me, that makes it clear that we don't own any of the talents. They're loaned to us or they're given to us there. So what, verse 15? Yeah.
One he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away.
Thank you. So that's the first thing I want to remember, that if you're able to identify the talents that God have given you, they're given to you. It's not yours to go burying the ground. It's not yours to avoid taking on a challenge that God has called you. It's given to you, and there's an expectation. Because verse 16 talks about, there's some expectations too. One, that you're expected to increase on that return. So it's not good, you know, when God gives you these talents or talent, you should find ways in the marketplace to use it effectively to double your effort, and in so doing, others are going to observe that, and it will draw them to the kingdom. So verse 16, Keith, if you want to go ahead and read that, what it talks about, please.
He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them. He made 5 talents more.
Yep. See? So now you don't need to guess, you know, when you get these talents, what you're supposed to do with it. You know, you can look at it, dust it off. Or, no, it's there for you to go out and work. Double effort. For me and that particular project on JWST, it meant what I had to go out and do is now learn from some of these. And it's been a wonderful experience. You know, as a matter of fact, it's a joke now. You know, after my staff meeting with the team, there's a couple really super smart guys on the team. I said, okay, time for Optics 101, and they gather around on a whiteboard and they start to explain to me, and I'm learning so much. And then I go down to the lab and I said, okay, cryogenics 101, and they take it out and they start to explain to me, and I'm like, wow, I didn't get any of the stuff in college. And now it's become really good, because now it forced it forced them also to think down at my level. And then all of a sudden, I get a chance to start create what I initially, when I took over the team, I explained to them. I said, here's my job. My job is to balance these three things, the technology, the schedule, and the budget, and they got to be in balance. And I know as an engineer, you guys want to make it perfect, but I don't have the time and I don't have the budget. So when I come downstairs and I tell you, you got to cut it off, you will cut it off. And I also explain to them that I understand that my job is also dependent on their success. And I intend to kind of keep my job. And so we had that very good understanding of when we start. So I need to get down and make sure I understood a lot of the technology that these guys are doing so I could manage it well. So it forced me to learn. I started to read books. I started to ask questions and get engaged. And I'm learning so much now. I'm starting to even use words that they said have shaken them. I said, oh, yeah, encircle energy. And they start to laugh because, like, you know, just a few months ago, they didn't even know what that is. Sometimes I still don't know what it is. But I know it's the right word to fit there when I'm going to tell them, you're not getting any more money, you know. So it's a joke now. I mean, you should see us having fun. I overheard one time, and I wasn't there at a meeting, and I'm walking by the conference room, and one of the engineers, he's saying, I am not going to be the one to go explain to Robert about this. So I'm telling you right now, you don't have any more money. I'm like, yes. So all of a sudden they're learning and I am learning. And it's a one good experience now. And one particular guy, he'd gotten so good at it that they promoted him. And, you know, I just found out 2 weeks ago. I said, no, you're not leaving here. You're going to stay here and you got to find a way to do that management job at night. And, you know, and so it's working out beautifully, you know, right now. Okay, moving along here. So the other point I want to make is that, and this is one that I think is very sobering for all of us. God will take, you know, if we're lazy, the talents that we have, eventually, if we don't use them, God will take them away and give them to somebody else. And if you look, verse 29, Keith. Oh, he's falling on the job. We've got to. No.
On his butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
29. To everyone who has, will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away.
So there you go. I didn't say it. And as manager, sometimes that's what you have to do. And so sometimes it gives me confidence too when I'm managing projects that, you know, I have to look somebody in there and say, you know, you're no longer part of the team because you're just not cutting it. And vice versa, you know, when the talents that God have given us, if we are not paying attention and using them, those are not my words, those are His words. They'll be taken away from us and they'll be given to someone else. And it might not be a believer because I don't believe God discriminates in those ways. You have unbelievers who work really hard. And in my world, 99% of them are unbelievers, and they're very talented people. And I've also, you know, been in circles where, you know, some of those, you know, individuals that are performing marginally claim to be believers. And I hesitate to give them work. I hesitate. I challenge them. So while we're here on earth with the talents that God has given us, it's so important that we take the simple story and apply it to our everyday life because others are watching us. You know, you can't see your job as just a 9-to-5 show up. You know, your kids are watching you. Okay? It's so important that we represent the Savior well in the things that He has called us to. Okay. So, my other point here, which I think I made earlier, is that I talk about the whole area of risk. And for me, it was an adjustment. It was an adjustment because even with the building project, in this economy, and like I said, one of these days I'll come back and tell that whole story. You know, if I look at it through the eyes of Wall Street, it was a huge risk. You're going to invest when everybody's downsizing. You're doing it. That was not my decision, quite honestly. I tried to run away from it like as far as I could get, but that was not God's plan. And so once, you know, I was adjusted in my thinking process that with God, once he calls for something, there's really no risk involved. He took away the risk. It's like your oxygen. You know, yeah, the only control you have is voluntary. You can stop your breath, or you can take a trip to the moon where it's not enough. You take your helmet off. Yeah, you get a reaction there. But my point is that God, you know, is like your oxygen. And so we have a clear advantage about doing it. So what's going on now? People are walking by and says, you're just a company of this size. How come you have this really $1 billion, really cool stuff? I don't know what God is doing. He has some plan. And I'm just going for the ride. Because I remember clearly they said, well, you know, I just want to be doing these things and not take on all of this other stuff. And God says, you know what? You're getting lazy again. And for me, it's always drawing me back where I want it comfortable. You know, that's why I don't have a business degree, but God in his infinite wisdom had me running two companies. And that's because I completely trust him every day. I completely trust him every day to help me make wise business decisions. And most of them are not in the context of how Wall Street would make these decisions too. They're in the context of Proverbs and other things like that. And I'm here to tell you that it does bear fruit. Couple other points. How much more time I have, Mark? A couple minutes. Wow. I got a whole half a page left. So let me just draw a couple of the key points here. Some of the benefits of good stewardship, you know, great relationship with God. If you recall when the master showed up after his return, it was a, you know, there was a good relationship there because they were able to show him, hey, master, I double my efforts. And the master, hey, you did a great job. So a relationship there, you know, when we're doing the things that we're supposed to do. And I can tell you, it's such an excellent experience now because in both of those projects as I'm interacting with some of these scientists and engineers now, you know, things are happening at home. Things are happening on the job. And I can point them back to, you know, here's how I deal with it. Well, where did you get that? Oh, you ever heard of the Book of Proverbs? No. Oh, really? You want to have lunch and talk about it? Yeah. And all of a sudden, you have some great relationships being built. point two here, I said, you know, it's also been a godly example to our friends in the marketplace. Some of the other benefits of being a good steward. There's some physical benefits. There's financial rewards associated with being a good steward of God's talents. And in closing, as I would say that in Proverbs 10 verse 4, it talks about it says here, poor is he who works with negligent hands, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. And in Proverbs 22:29, do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings and will not stand before obscure men. And that's in Proverbs 22, verse 29. And I have a little note here, if I have time. Am I to say that even going through the last couple of years with some of these, that there has not been some bumps? Oh, there have been plenty of bumps along the way. One of the ones that stick out here, it was so interesting. On the face of the project that I was leading when I first got on the JWST project, we were doing so good. We were ahead of schedule. So we're ahead of schedule and under budget. And then God says, check this out. We're going to have the government shut you down so that everyone else can catch up. And so I'm driving. It was on 270 that morning, and the phone rings, and it's my NASA project manager. Said, hey, Robert, you know, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm driving in. He goes, you're sitting down? Yeah, I'm driving. He says, I hate to tell you this, but because of the budget's challenges, you know, you guys are so far ahead, we're afraid that you're going to get too far ahead, so the interfaces between your part of the telescope and the others could be a problem. So we're going to shut you down. Really? Now, you see, in the government, you kind of shut it down and things go on. But as a private company with close to 90% of your labor force working on that project, And he just said, oh, going to shut you down. It was time to panic, right? And I'm driving to a center. I said, oh, yeah, I got it. Thank you. And I hang up. He's probably wondering why I'm so calm. The truth of it, I was not. But by the time I got to work, you know, the Lord was said to me, okay, I knew this was coming. I knew this call was coming way ahead of time. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to gather your staff together, and I want you to just go through the following. And so I quickly got them, you know, all around, and I got them in the conference room. I said, here's what just happened. We all just got fired. Because that's the way you say it in the private sector. And the answer is, what did we do? I said, no, because you guys perform well. That's why we all got fired. So here's what we're going to do now. No time to panic. For those of you, nobody's getting laid off or anything like that. But what we're going to do, for those of you who are Christians, I want you to pray. For those of you who are not Christians, you're going to see a miracle. I didn't know what that was. And then, I had to, you know. And they probably, you could look the stare in the eyes in everyone, you know. Okay, what's going to happen? Well, here's a short version. Within 2 weeks, roughly 70% of the engineers, we were able to find jobs on different projects. Okay? The ones that were remained, it was time for them to sharpen up on some other skills. And within a month, it was just about everyone but one person that was able to be placed in a different job. That's God's kindness. So then I brought them back, and I said, okay. So those of you who are Christians, you know, you saw God at work. For those of you who didn't understand what a miracle is, and you're working still, now you know what a miracle is. Because you know right on campus here, for you to get into these other projects at this phase of the game, and by the way, some of them within 2 weeks, when they saw the talent that some of these individuals had, they moved right into some key leading position. I can't get them back now. So I have another problem where the work got turned back on, and so some of these individuals have to be doubling up, you know, and doing work. My last point is that, you know, God is in everything we do. Even when it appears when he says, okay, it's time to trust me, I'm going to take this situation here, he's able to do that. So I want to thank you. And, you know, it's good to be back home, you know, with you guys. And I do miss you. But those are some of the things that have been happening in the last couple of years. And I'm quite sure before I deliver this year, because the interesting thing is I'm delivering both of those systems this year. And we don't know what we're going to do. But, again, I'm trusting God. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Rob.
Okay.
Actually, if you want to stay up here.
Sure.
We're going to have one of the things we like to do at Marketplace Ambassadors. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
One of the things we like to do is just to have a time of question and answer, so we can kind of draw Robert out on some different things. And so if you've been here in the past, we've kind of had discussion among ourselves. Today we're going to direct it towards Robert. So if you have questions, we'll raise your hand and get to those. Robert, just one thing I had for you was... It's neat seeing the balance that you seem to have a real kind of sober expectation of work. You know it's going to be difficult. Mm-hmm. You know there's going to be hardships that come along the way when they call you and tell you you're getting shut down. It's kind of, well, okay, another bump along the way. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of that sober expectation, but also there seems to be a real faith in the midst of that you know, you're trusting God, you're being aggressive in those times. And I know for me personally, it's sometimes I encounter those difficulties and I think game over. How do you balance that? What encouragement do you have for other guys as they're going through and they're trying to live by faith, they're seeing some difficulties. How do you navigate that?
Yeah. I remember clearly the first time when for me it was a complete trust in God. It was about the age, I was about 14 back in Jamaica. And I had been saving up for the longest time, if you haven't heard the story, to get to this Sunday school picnic. You know, back in Jamaica, it's not like here in the United States where, you know, you have school buses and that. So you have to find a way to get to school. So I quickly realized if I wanted to go to that particular outing, I had to save up enough money to go on this church outing because you had to pay to get on the bus. Well, cut a long story short, the last day to get on the trip, I had saved up just enough money to get on the trip. And the way I did that, I walked to and from school. And it was, you know, fairly large, fairly long walk. And my kids, I can't pull that one with my kids, you know, with snow and ice. They've been to Jamaica. But what the story was, I was walking, and this lady, she had two kids, one in her arm and the other one, and she called me sir. She said, sir, can you spare me 50 cents for a bus fare? And I remember I lied to her, and I says, no, because it was the last 50 cents that I have that would have gotten me on this trip. And as I'm walking off, about a half a mile, the Holy Spirit started to convict me and says, you know, no, you have that 50. You need to go back and give it to her. And I remember I ran as fast. I caught her up and said, ma'am, I'm so sorry I lied. You know, here's the 50 cents. And she said, God bless you. And instantly I felt great. I knew I was going to, you know, at that time, I knew I was going to get a chance to go to the Sunday school picnic. And so, but I was happy. I was happy I did the right thing. And as I'm walking back home now, I was kicking this can. I just kept kicking the can because I like soccer. And then the Holy Spirit said, pick up the can. And when I picked up the can, there's a dollar in there.
Get out of here.
I'm very serious. And so what I learned from that is that you can't outgive God. That was the first thing. My only point, you might not have an experience as drastic as that, but there are going to become opportunities for you to trust God. And with every time you trust Him, it becomes the starting point for the next thing that you need to build on. Okay? And so some of the things that people are seeing me step out in faith on, it's only baby steps, honestly. It's really baby steps because, you know, I did it back then. So a lot of times it's easy. I'm thinking, okay, you know, God has some way in this thing that seems strange here, you know, a part of a plan. Yeah.
That's excellent.
A stepping stone. Yeah.
Trusting God is like trusting God for something to end well. Can you just pour on that bread a little bit? How do you think about that? How do you process that?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
What you just said, trusting God, every time you trust God, it becomes the starting point for the next thing He has for you. What's that look like?
I would, for instance, here's one that I know I'm currently experiencing right now. Like I said, I deliver all my system this year. Okay, so God just put in a brand new 35,000 square foot facilities. Okay, at the same time, there's new technology. You look up the hill because I do get a chance, and you don't hear NASA taking on any great initiatives anymore. Okay, all right, wow, that's silence. You know, what are you going to do? All of that needs to happen in 6 months. And so, you know, I'm still processing that. So I don't have a story. Maybe 2 months from now, you come and I have another. But at the same time, honestly, I'm not anxious. You know, I really am not. Because I know, even that building project, I try to run away from it so many times, and God says, no, you can't. You won't. Because some of the stories that emerge from that building project and GC in it was as much as one of the guys that I brought on from a drywall company is very close to giving his life to Christ. Okay? And some of the other interactions that took place was a chance for me to have the gospel, you know, go forth in just my story. And so it's things like that are happening. So it's almost like God is setting up another situation, you know, here. It's not like his staff are smart. They know, and they don't hear. He hasn't called a staff meeting yet, you know. Staff. But one is coming here fairly soon. And, you know, as God sees fit, he's going to let it happen there. So, did I answer?
Yeah, that's good. What, I mean, what I heard you say, which I don't often think, is that God's setting up another situation for us.
Yeah. Let me just turn it off. You can't hear me, right?
Yeah, one other question I had for you, Robert, is, and it kind of goes back to what Mike shared. You have a lot of ambitious projects at work, and yet I looked up, I saw one of your bios and a lot of engineering things, but also at the bottom it just talked about how your love for your family, you like to make Caribbean dishes at home, And it just seemed like, you know, a lot of times you see people very ambitious in the workplace, really neglecting their home. Sometimes you see people very ambitious at home and not doing a whole lot in the office. And that's a tough line to walk as well. How do you do that? How do you know when, you know what, I'm neglecting the family, I've got too much, I've got another GC project going on. How do you know when there's a problem there? Sure.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. All right, so here's some practical things that I've, from the time that the Lord has given me a family, that I've quickly caught on to. Some of you know that I love to play racquetball. I still play. But prior to getting married, I used to play in tournaments and took all your weekend. Well, I know I've not played in a racquetball tournament in 23 years, okay, because I've been married 23 years, so I gave that up. And so the next thing that I try to do, I get involved. Like some of you know, I coach soccer. That gives me, you know, some time with my kids there. I do the food shopping at home. Why? You know, I don't sleep a lot. So I get up, and if you are at Sam tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, I'm at Sam, most likely one of my girls, doing the food shopping. I do laundry because I have girls. So while we're doing the laundry, you know, and we're doing stuff together. And so I try to maximize my time doing stuff. And at the same time, I'm teaching them too, you know, how to, you know, care for a home and do things like that. And so those are just some of the practical things that also keeps me humble there. I used to have a lot of speaking engagements. I just, you know, forego those, you know, in the whole interest of, you know, only a few years with the girls. So those are some of the practical things there. And you'd think even in that, sometimes it's smooth sailing. No, because my wife, after I adjusted that, she's like, I want to go to the food shop. I'm like, no, you know. You know, so we're trying to find our middle ground there. So it's not always victory, okay?
We kind of open up. Yeah. I'm going to repeat the question. Just we're trying to record the audio. So the question is, how do you find talents? How do you discover what your talents are to be using?
I think when I started off by saying, you know, if you can't clearly identify what are some of the talents that God has given you, then I would say the place to start, you know, talk to some of your childhood friends, talk to your coworkers, you know, talk to your spouse, and say, you know, what do you think I'm good at? Okay? Because sometimes the thing that you love to do doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that's where the talent really lies. And so you spend a lot of time chasing after, you know, broken dreams, so to speak. And so you start to get a sense there from others, you know, giving you some good feedback. For me, you know, it was obvious that God has granted me the gift that I can look ahead, I can put teams together, I see certain situations, challenges, even sometimes as smart as some of these guys are on the team, in breaking down the physics, breaking down the chemistry, it's just a common sense solution, right? Staring them in the face. And so, you know, God has granted me favor to be able to see some of these and say, no. How about if you move this here, that here, and you hear them go, how come I never thought of that before? And so quickly I know when God allows me to take over a team, it's an opportunity for those talents to come to the forefront. And so how you shepherd them is, you know, making sure that you're not shying away from those opportunities that are going to come. And you don't have to force them on anyone either. You know, you don't. You know, that's where God grants favor for you to use them to demonstrate. Did I answer, Art? Is that helpful? Okay.
Any other questions? So the question is, what is your most precious talent?
I would sum it up this way, is as I just described it. I've never seen, if someone comes with a problem, I see it as a solution. I've just always seen it that way. You know,
If you come and say, this thing don't work, I'm like, great. Let me see what it is. And so that's something I quickly observed even as a kid, you know, growing up, and was willing to take the risk. To the point where there's a whole story I could tell you. My mom, you know, she'll have to tell you the story. I got a spanking for it because I wanted to know how our stove worked. And in Jamaica, if you figure that out, you have to work like for several years before you could even buy a particular appliance. And so my mom had worked a lot to get her one stove, and I wanted to find out how this thing works, and I pulled it apart and couldn't put it back together before she came back home. And that was the last time. So when we got our first television set, I remember when we got our first television set, I remember she looking at me and says, if you touch that, I will kill you. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say evangelism. I really enjoy doing that. And so God, again, has grant favor there, you know, with that. And also prayer. I pray a lot. I really do. But I really enjoy evangelism because I know that God has opened up some doors where most of the folks I interact with will most likely never come to church, you know, but that we can take the church to them. And so, like I said, the times when you see them and some of the conversations that we have when we're together is not about what JWC is going to do. It's just not about that. It's usually, you know, how's, you know, your kids doing? You know, how is your wife doing? How is your husband doing? And, you know, I get to travel a lot. Sometimes it's long airplane rides. I just have that conversation. And, you know, God has shown much favor. I have one particular colleague right now. He's from in Europe, and his entire family now and our family has just gotten so close. And to the point now that whenever he comes over here to the United States, I remember one day he was having dinner with us, and somehow we didn't pray and said, whoa, you guys need to pray. And I'm like, okay. You know, the kids and us, we're just laughing because, you know, Mr. Benasco reminded us that we need to say grace. You know, and that was just completely new to him. So those are some of the things I think God has been kind enough to bless.
That's great. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Because I know earlier you mentioned talking to your team, and you kind of mentioned a proverb. I don't know if you quoted the proverb or you just kind of said the gist of it, and they asked you about it, and you kind of, well, that's a proverb. If, you know, if you want to talk more about that, let's go to lunch. So it seems like you have real good relationships with the people you're working with. You're not afraid to throw some things out there, and yet it also seems like you're doing it in a very respectful and winsome way for them, which, you know, I think a lot of times it's hard. How do we get into those conversations, and how do we do it in a way that really serves those people? Could you elaborate a little bit more on what you did?
For instance, here's another practical experience that I did with one of the, you know, fairly senior program manager at NASA. You know, I'm driving. Most of the time I have the difficult conversations on Tuesday. That's why I don't carpool, by the way. Because, you know, God really uses that time to do some amazing things. And so, one, you know, I've just been praying, how should I introduce, because they all know I'm a Christian, you know, they know, because there was a joke. I remember there's this one guy from another company that's on the team, and this guy just loved cursing. Oh man, he gets into it. And so one day I took over this, he came to one of my meetings and he started. I'm like, whoa. I said to this particular interview, I said, you know, this is a kids meeting when it comes to that language. Like, what? And so after the meeting, I gently, you know, just talk with him and share the thing, you know, perspective and how he's smart enough to use other words, you know, when things are not going on. Well, sure enough, you know, he came to the meeting and he caught himself right before he used one of those famous words. And he goes, that's right. This is Robert's PG meeting. So, darn it. He goes, darn it. You know, well, that whole little conversation led to he and I are very close friends, that his grandson was having a problem, and all of a sudden now we're talking, and every time he sees me now, I'm saying, hey, pray for me. You know? And it's just, again, just challenging at one particular individual. And yeah, he still listens to it from time to time, but whenever he shows up at one of my meetings, he says, oh yeah, darn it. You know, or, you know, yeah, it's one of Robert's latest meetings. You know, that's what he calls it. You know, he uses any kind of, you know, label, but it's an opportunity. Now, going back to this one particular manager, it's just challenging him. One day I went out to an event and just was observing his sons, you know, misbehaving. And so I just asked him, you know, I made this observation here, and, you know, what are some of the principles you use to help manage your son? When, and he said, well, I don't have any. I said, oh, I got some good ideas for you. And, you know, just slowly introduce him, say, oh, where do you find that? You know, and he started to give him some proverbs, and then I pick up a book, you know, How to Raise Boys, and a couple of tapes, and, you know, he's so appreciative of that. You know, next thing I know, I invited him to an event, one of our company event, and then his wife showed him, said, oh, yeah, so you're the gentleman that, you know, have my husband, you know, talking to the kids. So, you know, God is just, you know, doing some things there, amazing there.